Today's talk is given by Julie Proctor of GreenSpace Scotland. Our talk is entitled Using OS GreenSpace to Transform Urban Places into People Places. Julie Proctor is Chief Executive of GreenSpace Scotland. With over 20 years' experience working in the environment sector, Julie is passionate about the importance of GreenSpace close to where people live and the many benefits it delivers for people, places and nature. GreenSpace Scotland is Scotland's park and green space charity working towards the goal that everyone living and working in urban Scotland should have easy access to quality green space, which meets local needs and improves their quality of life. Current Green Space Scotland programmes include Young Place Changers, Climate Change Parks, Tesco Bags of Help Community Grants, Park Power, Food Growing Strategies, My Park Scotland, which is also Scotland's only crowdfunding platform, especially for parks and green spaces, and of course Scotland's Green Space Map, which is all here for. In 2011, GreenSpace Scotland and Partners published the world's first national green space map, and following that, following work with Urban Survey, and that was based on a new generation of products. So we're taking the OS GreenSpace products, including a detailed GreenSpace master map layer, and also that's for the academics, the public sector users and academics, and also the open version for everyone. So that's freely available to the general public. So the map provides accurate, up-to-date information to support green space and green network development and management, policy making, investment and research in relation to air quality, biodiversity, regeneration, food resilience, health and well-being, and possibly other things. So with a high level of interest in all things green here in the room the coming weekend, and the number of map enthusiasts in the room, we are ideally placed to enjoy what should be a very interesting seminar. And who better to guide us through Scotland's green pastures than Julie?
Thank you very much, Owen. I don't know whether you say good afternoon or good evening at this kind of point of the day. But anyway, hello, good to see you. And I understand that I'm sort of the interval that justifies an evening of drinking. So you have some that starts, you come to a lecture, and then you repair to the bar afterwards. So I kind of understand the priorities here. But anyway, thank you very much to Owen and also to Abby for the invitation to talk about green space and our work with Urban Survey to develop the new OS Green Space products. What I'm going to do, assuming the clicker works, it did before, we're not pointing it in the right place. To the development of the new green space map in Scotland, and I'm going to share with you some examples of how the data is being used. Now, whenever I talk to people, particularly when they say there's a lot of mapping enthusiasts and GI folk, I have to start with a confession. I have absolutely no background at all in GIS. My interest is in how you use the data and how you use it to inform policy and to improve practice. So at the end of the session, if you ask me any detailed technical questions, you'll probably just get a kind of blank look. But hopefully there are colleagues in the audience who might be able to answer some of those difficult questions. So Owen gave an introduction about Green Space Scotland. For those who aren't familiar with us, we are Scotland's Parks and Green Space Charity. We're an independent charity and we're a social enterprise. And as Owen says, we work towards the goal that everyone has easy access to quality green space. And a lot of what we do as an organisation focuses very much on pioneering new approaches to how we manage and how we resource green space. So we think green space really matters. And it isn't just the spaces where the kids kick a ball around or where your neighbour walks the dog. What this slide shows is how green space contributes to all five of the strategic objectives of the Scottish Government. Healthier, wealthier and fairer, safer and stronger, smarter and greener communities. And we can show you through research and case studies how green space delivers on all of those things. But if you're going to realise those benefits, what you need is a strategic and a planned approach to how you're going to manage those green space assets. To do that, you need to know where is the green space, what's its extent, what's its distribution, what's its type, and how accessible is it. So one of the key drivers for our work on green space mapping and the first Scotland's green space map was Scottish planning policy. and particularly Planning Advice Note 65, and that for the first time put a requirement on local authorities to produce urban space audits and strategies. Not a difficult thing, you would think, but back then you talked to local authorities, they didn't have a single register of the land that they owned, they didn't even know what they managed, so parks managed some, housing managed something else, it was all held in lots of different places. So that's the time when we started to work with local authorities to map their green space. And a quick fast forward to September 2011, and we published the world's first national green space map. This was the first time anybody had mapped any country's green space in this way. And what we did was we categorised and captured every piece of vegetated land and water within the urban environment. So we were quite excited about that. And this data was available to public sector users as data. And initially, and this shows you how the world's moved on, initially we were distributing that by CD-ROM. And if Abby was here, she would remember burning that to CDs and putting them in envelopes and posting them out. But we later came up with a download version. And we also made it available to the general public and to other users as an interactive map that was hosted by Scottish Natural Heritage and also Scotland's Environment Web. And this is just an extract from that interactive map. So we were all feeling quite happy with ourselves in autumn 2011. And the original plan we had was we were going to keep this map up to date. Each council signed an agreement, a 10-year agreement. They would maintain and update their data, and they would release it to us at periodic intervals. We'd collate it, and we'd have an up-to-date green space map. Yeah, it was a good idea. It quickly became very, very clear to us that local authorities had not got the capacity or the resources to be able to do this. And that first time we were collecting the data, we were getting these cheerio emails from GI colleagues within local government going, don't know who's going to do this next time, but it isn't going to be me. So we had a really fantastic product, but it was already getting out of date by the time we started to publish it. So it was one of those like, what do we do now? And then we had one of those kind of light bulb, a bit of a no-brainer type moments of, who does mapping? Who's got a huge geodatabase? Who's got surveyors on the ground? Flies aerial imagery. Aha, yes. And that was the beginning of a very, very positive working relationship with Ordnance Survey. But it wasn't just Ordnance Survey. There were an awful lot of other organisations involved in this process. So we had a multi-agency technical working group that later became a project board. We worked with all of the councils, most of the public agencies as we developed this to make sure that we had something that would meet everybody's needs. And we worked really closely with Ordnance Survey on a lot of different technical trials and pilots to work out whether they could produce something that looked like the green space map, and actually they could, and they could do something better than the original green space map that we had. So we came up with a method of doing this with them, and that also meant that Ordnance Survey were incredibly well placed when colleagues down in Westminster caught on to this, and the government down there made a manifesto commitment about producing a green space data set. And so that meant that we weren't just doing something in Scotland, we also worked with colleagues in BASE, Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy, or something like that. They keep changing their acronyms as it goes on. But it also meant we were working with a stakeholder group in England and Wales to find out what they were looking for from the product as well. So that meant that what we were working on wasn't just for Scotland, but it was something that is now GB-wide. So another kind of fast forward. Torrential rain in Scotland. This is obviously summer. It was raining. And this is the launch photo from Scotland, so standing outside Parliament overlooking Arthur's Seat. If you've seen any of the English launch pictures, same day, but basically blue sky, sunshine, shirt sleeves, Ben Fogle in shorts. But hey, we wouldn't have the green space if it wasn't for the rain. So, and it's not very often that you get a minister standing that happily and cheerily out in the rain, but I think we were absolutely soaked through manipulating all of these huge props that Ordnance Survey provided for the photo. That, you know, it was good fun. It was the end of quite a long journey on that. So what we were actually launching with Ordnance Survey that day were two new green space products, so Open and Master Map. And for anybody anybody who'd seen Scotland's green space map before, Mastermap was the most similar version of that. So we'll start though with the open green space. The audience for this really is the general public, and it's mainly about where do you find places that you can go and visit for leisure and recreation. There's somebody who tweets from London who uses it in quite an interesting way, and he describes it as his "where do I eat my lunch today" map, and he finds a different spot to go out and eat sandwiches every day. So, you know, it's good to see the map being put to good use. But this version can also be used by app developers and for a wide range of other purposes. It's GB-wide and it covers urban and rural areas. And what it provides is site extents for areas of green space that are typically publicly accessible. So it'll give you, for instance, the boundary of a park, a play area, or a playing field. And then for each of those sites, it will also provide you with access points, and it will tell you whether it's a vehicular or a pedestrian access. These are the types of green space that are included in the open product. They're generally publicly accessible, but, and there's a huge sort of flashing caveat that comes with this, just because it's shown on here doesn't mean it is open to the public or available free of charge. So there's quite a lot of golf courses on here that you can't just roll up and play without paying. But also this kind of reverse of that is true. There are some sites which don't feature on the open product which are important sites for public recreation. So a lot of amenity green spaces, woodlands, don't feature on here. So colleagues in Forestry Commission are really quite exercised about the fact that woodlands aren't there at the moment. And so that's something that we are still looking at, but it's about making sure that this was something that was consistent GB-wide and we had confidence in the information that was there. So how do you find it? Well, you get it through OS Green Space Online. You can get it through the OS Maps app. And you can also download the data. And most of the promotion, if you've seen any of it from Ordnance Survey, has really focused on this open product and the map app particularly. But from our perspective, the real powerhouse, and I think what's probably more interesting to you today, is the OS Mastermap Green Space layer. And this really is intended much more for a public sector audience. It's freely available to OSMA and to PSMA members. And also, and I've now had confirmation that it really, really is, it's available for academic users through ADENA. And that's something that is really important because that we know there were a lot of academic users of the original data set. So what you have in this layer is a comprehensive data set. It's GB-wide, but where it differs from the open version is this only covers urban areas. So what that means if you're in Scotland, when we say urban for this product, it means settlements of 500 population with a 500 metre buffer around the settlement boundary. And that is different to the original green space map we had in 2011. We've got much wider coverage because originally we were just looking at populations of 3,000. So I mean, there's not a lot of settlements left under 5,000. So it really is quite good coverage. So in this product, every green space polygon is assigned a primary and a secondary attribution for function and for form. And that categorisation is done following a very strict hierarchy to ensure consistency. We had a very clear method statement, we had a clear set of rules the first time round, but we were working with 32 local authorities. They applied them all a wee bit flexibly, so we didn't have the same consistency when we brought the product together. We absolutely have that consistency now. So these are the types of green space that are included in the master map layer. So although we use the term green space, you'll see it's also yellow spaces. We're including foreshores, beaches, and blue spaces because water is in there as well. Every polygon can have up to two form and two function types. So you could have, for example, a golf course that's within a park, which is also woodland and open semi-natural. And that, again, is much more improved than the original product, where you could only have two categories. And what we found at that time was we were really under capturing some areas of woodland, open semi-natural, so quite a big improvement this way. You can find out a lot more about the full product. You can get the full specification and you can download some sample data to have a play with online on the Ordnance Survey website. If you're a member of OSMA or ADENA, then you can get this through your usual download portal. The biggest benefits, really, for us of this new generation of green space map is that consistency. It was the addition of access points in the open product, because it's not just about where the green space is, but how do people find it? And also the arrangements that are now in place to keep this up to date and to keep it maintained. So Ordnance Survey are committed to refresh this product every 6 months, and they'll do that at least until the end of the current OSMA agreement. And the other key thing on here is there is a feedback tool. So if you spot something that's wrong, do use that tool and tell Ordnance Survey, and that can then be corrected for the next update. And so that's kind of a key part of when changes are happening, particularly for local authorities, to get that information in the new product as soon as possible. So I'm going to move on and talk a little bit about using the data. But before I do that, I just kind of wanted a quick show of hands. Who here has seen or used the Open Green Space product? Okay, quite a few of you. And the master map layer? Woo, two, okay. So there's an exciting new thing for you to unwrap and go and have a look at then. Okay. So how we use it is the bit that does get me really quite excited about it. And we know the 2011 map was used really widely for policy, for research, for practice, at a range of different scales, from the very local, through local authority, through regional and national. And I'm going to give you a few examples. But while I do that, I'm going to give Owen a task, which is to hand out some post-it notes. People who know me know I don't go anywhere without post-it notes or sticky dots. And if everybody could pass them along and just take a couple of post-it notes each.
Random
and point. While I'm talking, what I would like you to be thinking about and to write on your post-it, one thing per post-it, is thinking about how you or other people might use the OS Green Space data. Because that, I think, is really why I'm here talking to you today. We've got something interesting. What would you do with it? So it might not be something you can do, but it might be something that you think Forestry Commission, Scottish Government, Scottish Power, anybody could do. And there will be, we'll check your homework when we get to the end of the talk. Okay? So a few examples of how we're using the data just now. So this is what it was originally intended for. And it actually now seems pretty mundane what we were thinking about. So basically, open space audits, open space strategies by local authorities. Five, lots of others have used it to inform those strategies. And the reason why this is really timely of the release of the new data is that many councils have now just reached the point when they're starting to review their open space strategies. And so they have access to this new updated information, and that's a huge cost saving, because what they would have done otherwise is have to commission consultants to go out and map their green space for them. We're starting, you know, getting ahead of the game. One product is already meeting all of those needs. And this time, the inclusion of access points in the open product and with a link file that works between the two has been a huge benefit. We've also just got a new requirement coming out on local authorities as part of the Community Empowerment Act, and that's now going to require them to produce local food growing strategies. They're not all going to look like this, but this is my sort of map for those of you, who are perhaps looking for something more technical. But what we're seeing councils starting to do is use the green space data and use it with their communities to start to identify in a town across the full local authority spatial opportunities for where you might develop food growing opportunities. So it might be an allotment, it might be a community garden, it might be raised beds on vacant and derelict land, it could be vertical growing, a whole host of opportunities. But the starting point is, where is the land? Where are the opportunities? How do we match that with the needs that are coming from communities? So they might not all look quite as pretty as Edible Twecker, but certainly we'll see a lot more of these maps coming through in the next wee while. So I'm going to move us up to a regional scale. And the Glasgow Clyde Valley Green Network Partnership have probably made more extensive use of the green space data than any other single organisation. And what's interesting about the way they've used it is they've used it in conjunction with a whole range of other data sets. So the very first thing they used it for was green network development opportunities in the Glasgow Clyde Valley Strategic Development Plan. So what they were doing here was using green space alongside other data sets on biodiversity, access, land use change, and social need. And they did that to identify geographical locations where you've got a strong correlation between the data layers. And that meant you'd got opportunities where you get the biggest bang for your buck. If you invested in those areas, you were going to deliver multiple benefits. So what that led to was the identification of 14 strategic green network opportunities within the structure plan. They then moved down to work with the individual local authorities to translate that into green network opportunities in each of the 8 councils within the Glasgow and Clyde Valley area. They then kind of zoomed up a scale to come up with the green network blueprint. And then they looked at urban green networks for every area, for every town within that settlement, looking at nodes and connections and what could be developed. They've also had their hands on the new data, and they've been doing some really interesting stuff with that. And if you ever get the opportunity to invite Ali Corbett to come and talk to you, he can talk at great length about what they're doing around flood and health risks. So this is where they're using the data alongside a whole range of other data sets to look at natural flood management solutions. They're also looking at how you can use it to target green space interventions for physical activity and about health improvement. And so that's about using very much the accessibility and network analysis. And the health stuff is really interesting because I think probably the biggest use of green space data has been around health, and particularly around research. And in Scotland particularly, researchers and academics have used the data to do some really groundbreaking research on the impact of green space and health. So just recently, CRESH, which is a partnership between Edinburgh Uni and Glasgow Uni, they've just published studies that have shown the influence of neighbourhood green space on children's development. They've shown the impact of green space on healthy birth weights of children. And a fascinating study from Mood, Mobility and Place has shown the value of longitudinal data, not our data, I have to say, but they've gone back and worked with a cohort of people who were born in 1936, and they've mapped them through various life stages and looked at the proximity of parks and green space at each key point to conclude that, particularly in childhood years, availability of green space in your neighbourhood has a positive impact on cognitive ageing. So, you know, you're going to age better if you live near green space. So bear that in mind, you know, when you're next looking at where you choose to live. And so what we have kind of got is very simplistic. There's a lot of studies that go, yeah, green space is good for you. What we're now getting with the updated data is opportunities to really get into a bit more fine grain on that. So with that refresh every 6 months, you can start to get into longitudinal studies. So how has green space changed in the area? What impact has that had on health? And which bits of green space are having an impact on people's health? I mean, if you look around Scotland, you'll actually find a lot of green spaces, what we call, and this is a technical term, crap green space. boring green deserts, mown within an inch of its life, no good for people, no good for biodiversity. So that isn't having any positive impacts on your health. So we can actually start to look at, do woodlands have more of an impact? What about natural green spaces? None of that was available to researchers until we got this product. So I think watch this space. There's some interesting stuff coming up. And it might be stuff that you're doing as well. But now, hot off the press, or whatever the digital equivalent of hot off the press is, I don't know what the term is for this now. Just going to introduce you quickly to the new State of Scotland's Green Space report. We published it 2 weeks ago, 1st of February, and this is the first resource that we've developed that has used the new data. And what it does is it provides a summary, or summary information around the quantity, the extent, the type of green space across Scotland and by each of the 32 local authorities. And so, now that we've got this, we can confirm Scotland truly is a green nation. In our towns and cities, they are more grey than green. So green space covers more than 50% of the urban land area. And so we've got one upon London because they've just established a national park city with the aim of getting to London being 50%. We're already there in Scotland, so you can gather that goes down well when we talk to colleagues in Scottish Parliament. But it also means we now have figures to be able to say how much green space do we have in Scotland. So this is your second bit of audience participation. Does anybody want to give us a guess? How much green, urban green space do we have in Scotland? Come on, somebody's got to give it a go.
In hectares? Or?
Give me square kilometres. Give me hectares if you want, then we can convert it.
632.
Okay, higher or lower?
Lower.
Higher.
Okay, hands up for higher, hands up for low. Hands up for higher. Okay, hands up for lower. Oh, there's a lot of undecideds in here. Okay, it's higher. Does anybody want to give me another figure? So we've got 632. It's definitely higher than that.
931.
Okay. Okay. 1,593 square kilometres. So, yeah. I have to say, I can't really get my head around that. So we had to do a little bit of a translation. So you'll see up there, that's an area about 22 Loch Lomonds. So that sounds, that's a lot. And then we put it into another, we used another figure on that. It's about a third of the area of the Cairngorms National Park. So actually it's not that much really when you consider Scotland's land area. So I don't know, depends what you think about that. What we also are able to look at in the report is, so which is the greenest local authority? And we know that North Lanarkshire has the greatest urban area of green space. So 64% of North Lanarkshire's urban area is green space. And if we ignore private gardens, and we just look at the mainland local authorities, we've roughly got 27 hectares per 1,000 people. So I did a bit of maths here, and that's about a tennis court size of green space for each of us. So, you know, if we go out and we divided the meadows up, you know, that's basically what you've got. But I don't think you're allowed to take it home with you. So what we also can do in this report is start looking at different types of green space. And two types really dominate. Private gardens and amenity spaces, they account for more than two-thirds of that green space. And so people are saying to us, well, why on earth are you recording private gardens? What's that got to do with anything? Because it's not something that everybody can have public access to. But when you're looking at green space in terms of green infrastructure, in terms of delivering ecosystem services, if we're looking at flooding, if we're looking at biodiversity, those private gardens are really important. And we've seen a trend in a number of urban areas around gardens being paved over, decking being put down. So actually, you potentially could be losing a lot of green space through that. So it is interesting to have that understanding of where the private gardens are as well. I think the figure that surprises most of us is that parks and gardens, public parks and gardens, they only come in at 4%. Playing fields and sports areas, 9%. Play areas, allotments, less than 1%. So it was quite interesting to get that understanding of what does Scotland's green space look like. And I'll apologise in advance for this slightly migraine-inducing slide. But what we can also look at now is, so how does that distribution vary across Scotland's local authorities? And I have to emphasise here, this is not a league table. It's not the more green space you have, the better. You know, we're not playing Edinburgh off against Glasgow on this. Because how much green space you have, what sort and how it's distributed, really depends on how those settlement patterns came about. So, you know, it's historic how a lot of that green space happens to be there. But the other reason why it's not just the more green space, the better, is back to that crap green space. Quality really counts. So when you get to a green space, does it meet your needs? Does it feel safe? Does it feel welcoming? And at the moment, we don't have a consistent way in Scotland of measuring quality. So that really is the next thing that we're starting to look at. Can we get a quality layer that will overlay the quantitative data we've got? Because that would also be really quite helpful in terms of the national indicator that we have on improving access to green space. And what the national indicator says at the moment is that everybody should live within a 5-minute walking distance of green space. At the moment, the place they get the information, the measure for this indicator, is from the Scottish Household Survey. So they ask people, do you live within 5-minute walk of greenhouse? Green space, is it 6 minutes, 10 minutes? So what colleagues in Scottish Government are doing at the moment is looking at whether the new OS products can give us a more robust way of identifying accessibility. But there is an interesting thing coming in here. You may physically have access to it, but does it feel like you have? Is there a dual carriageway in the way? What's your walking route? And then in some areas, there are territorial issues, particularly around kids' access to it, that actually there is an invisible line that goes across there and you can't access that green space. So there is still an interesting element around perceptions as well as the actual reality of green space. We're really just at the beginning of what you might do with this product, and we've been looking at how it can be part of the solution to lots of the challenges that we're faced in Scotland and across GB. So we've been working as well with the Almond Survey Geovation Hub on a greener and smarter communities challenge. There were 10 projects that were shortlisted, and they've all been at Geovation Camp this weekend. And they were all pitching this afternoon down at the Royal Geographic Society. I don't know who the winner is yet because I was following on Twitter on the train on the way here and I haven't seen who's been announced yet. But that was, again, a really interesting way of going out to a different community. The sector identified the problems and it went out to the tech community to come up with what the challenge, what the solutions might be. So have a look at GVA 2018 and see what the exciting projects have been that were coming through. So there's lots of exciting stuff we could do with this. So there's been conversations about GP green prescribing. So when you go to your doctor's surgery, perhaps you're not going to get a prescription, but he's going to give you a printout of the green space map and tell you that's your walking route. Make sure you walk to work on that route. And you're probably more likely to do it if you're actually given a little printed map and you're told to go and do it than if you're just told that you have to walk more active. There's a lot of information going on and discussion going on now around natural capital accounting. This gives information for that. Emergency services using the data for how do you get in and out of sites. So lots of emerging ideas and opportunities. So that was really all I was going to talk to you about. And I'm happy to take questions. But before I do that, this is now your test for homework. So that's a few ideas of how you could use it. What have you come up with in terms of how you might or others might use it? Okay, does anybody want to share what you've got on your bits of paper? There was certainly one at the front on the forehead, so away you go. How are you going to use the data?
I guess I'd put down one rather obvious thing and an interest. In terms of measuring development and ensuring we retain our green space, we're in a situation at the moment where all these new housing developments, because we've got to provide housing for thousands more people, and it's kind of monitoring green space and making sure that we don't lose the green space we've got, which is a big issue in terms of Edinburgh, in terms of loss of green belt and so on. So I guess that's probably boring but necessary application.
And making sure that when those new developments go in, you are connecting any green corridors and routes that are there. Okay, anybody else?
Green space deserts.
Uh-huh.
As in food desert.
Food deserts?
Food deserts are places within cities where people have poor access to good quality food.
Yeah.
And I was thinking you could take that idea and apply it to green spaces, areas of the city where there is very little green space.
Yeah.
And, given its link to well-being and health.
Yes, definitely. Okay. Yeah.
As a young parent, parents of toddlers play meet-up groups in green space and parks. Some form of app that would actually link people.
Yeah, there's some interesting potential here coming out for apps. So we have Run My Park Scotland, and that's a searchable site as well that gives you those places. But another product that came out from Golden Survey Geovation Hub previously was OpenPlay, and that's a booking facility service, but it also helps people meet up if you're playing football and so on. So yes, there could be apps. There's a website at the moment that's starting to develop around where free play facilities, so that if you're visiting other areas, you find them. Any other suggestions?
partnerships to help like promoting social capital, so things like interaction.
Yeah, because there's a huge amount of research that shows that if you live in a greener neighbourhood, you're more likely to know your neighbour, you feel safer, and there's lower crime against people and property. And it's a strange thing. If you walk down a street, you don't talk to people. You meet somebody in a park or a green space, and you say hello, you talk about the weather, you might be walking dogs, you've got your kids with you. So you're right, it really is that sort of melting where people come together. Yeah?
Just on the kind of... I feel like green space has a bit of a kind of a start stop system where when you're younger you can use green space quite openly with when you're a child and with your parents and you don't really need to apply the green space in any way to play with it, and then you get into kind of teenage middle range where green space can just become a kind of flat bit of grass and there needs to be some functionality with it. So my question is, kind of like purge on ball sports and no kicking balls in this area kind of thing, like could this be implemented to actually have larger scale kind of sports for younger people?
Yeah. I often have a slide with me which has got a kid in front of the no ball game sign going, why? Aberdeen City Council actually made a commitment to remove all no ball game signs, and they set themselves a target of when they would do it by, and they failed to deliver on that target because there were a lot more signs out there than they realised, and they didn't know where they all were. But you're right, and it's something we're working on. We have a programme called Young Place Changes, and so we're working with youth groups and young people, and it's about reimagining, reinventing spaces, and looking at what people want to do in those spaces right throughout life. Because generally what happens for teenagers and young people is you get given a youth shelter, a kind of like a metal umbrella to sit under, and that's about it, you know. So it is about understanding what different people want.
Adding to that, just looking at which bits of green space and what and how this is changing are accessible. So obviously if you can't go and use a golf course, sort of linking to the questions around privatisation of public space, when things are accessible to general public.
Yeah, I mean, there is actually in the product provision to actually put something about land ownership. We haven't done at this point, and you know, there's certain hesitations about doing that, but certainly, you know, understanding is it publicly owned space, is it privately owned space, and certainly down colleagues in England are really increasingly concerned about the privatisation, commercialisation of spaces, and it's often seen as the only way it can be maintained is it goes out to somebody private who then can close it off at 9 o'clock, close it completely for events. So yeah, that whole issue of land ownership, it's probably going to come up more in Scotland than elsewhere because we do have quite an interest in who owns the land. So I mean, it's something I'm sure Andy Wyman will be taking an interest in.
So following on from that one, I'm interested in names and sort of linking names to history. Are names part of the product?
Yeah, on the open product, I think there might be four fields looking over there. Dom's kind of going, there's certainly two or three, it's either between two and four spaces to put names in, because we recognise that lots of spaces have more than one name. So there's often the official name that the council gives it, and then there's what it's called locally. And in big parks, depending on which side of the park you live, you might call it something different. So there is that space to add that. So there is a crowdsourcing opportunity in here as well to capture that element around names and how they change over time.
I've got a follow-up question as well. Would they be looking to, in the future, like green space is kind of seen as this like idyllic kind of place to go, but would they be looking to take into data of like perceptions of fear around green space into the mapping so that they could actually see not only where there's poor quality green space but a perception of fear within that green space and how to then start to tackle that?
Yeah, I mean that's one thing that we're really, really interested in, is that whole kind of quality dimension. So there are quality standards out there, and it's basically, you know, like, is the grass closely mown, is there litter, you know, stuff. So you could end up with a place that you've got an all-weather football pitch with floodlights, tick, high quality. If local people wanted somewhere to grow fruit and veg, well, actually it doesn't meet their needs, so it's not high quality. And we want parks and green space to do different things at different times. So I can go out to the park with friends, and you're looking for somewhere to run, you're looking for somewhere for kids to play, and you want somewhere lively. Another time you had a really bad day at work, and you just want somewhere really quiet to just go to skate. So the same place, you want to do different things. So to get that understanding of quality, you kind of have to know, what were you looking for at that time? So there's a program at the moment that Nesta are running called Rethinking Parks. And one of the things we're talking about with local authorities is there a way of coming up with some sort of app, which is a kind of a crowdsourcing rating in terms of quality? So a bit like, you know, when you go to the motorway services, you know, were you happy with the toilets? Yes, no. So, but you could also get, how did it make you feel? You know, so do you feel safe here? Do you feel vulnerable? Because that will change maybe at different times of the day. So I think there's quite a lot that we could do in terms of crowdsourcing, quite a lot of stuff around using smartphone data to understand where people are going and what they're doing at different times. And I think we're just sort of right on the edge of what we can do there.
Right, well, normally I contribute to sort of fielding questions, but...
We're having a conversation!
we can carry on for a bit, and then maybe we can go and check that our refreshments are still there, but I think Chris is okay.
I think launched into questions. Thank you, thank you for your clear enthusiasm for the topic. I guess I'm interested in the methodology of thinking about just urban green space and then breaking that down to very small urban areas, because unless I misinterpret your map wrongly, two worst council areas for green space were the Orkneys and the Western Isles, which are some of the greenest places I know with very small settlements. So where you can easily walk within 5 minutes to real green space. So I'm just wondering, if you put that down in front of a minister, they go, oh, wait, I'm going to do something about improving green space in these areas. And clearly that's a non-issue. So it's just, why the methodology focused on urban areas, which works really well in Glasgow and Edinburgh and Aberdeen and so on, but is never going to work in Edinburgh.
That's why when I talk, I often just talk about the mainland authorities rather than others. Because it's, again, Ag Isle of Bute, Highland as well. I mean, but Ag Isle of Bute and Highland actually have quite a good amount of urban green space. Historically, when Green Space Scotland was set up by Scottish Natural Heritage, we were charged with looking at urban Scotland. And we came up with a definition of urban, which was 3,000 population. And then we kind of fudged it to talk about clusters of communities that are urban in character. So if you think of like the ex-mining villages, they've got, you know, they're urban, but they're villages on a much smaller scale. It's something actually, and we talked about this a lot when we looked at 500 as the threshold, because surprisingly, even if you live in a small rural village, you can actually have less access to green space than if you live in a city. That's because what you might be surrounded by is agricultural land, privately owned land. In theory, the Land Reform Act says you can go there, but you have to be a fairly confident countryside user sometimes to do that, and it's your neighbour's fields that you're walking over. So sometimes those very small rural clachans, you know, all you've got is a small swing park, and that's it. So although Orkney and Shetland kind of come out, you know, they are slightly different because, I mean, completely different landholding patterns and so on the islands as well. But you're right, it does throw up the need to be careful about how you use the data.
Yeah, because it's all concept of common land and so on, which does make that green space accessible, even though theoretically it's maybe not.
Can I just ask a question relating to assessing the quality of green space? Is there any work planned on, for example, looking at the biodiversity as contribution to natural capital accounting of green space?
Yeah. At the moment, there are two or three main approaches to assessing quality that are used in Scotland. I think about a third of local authorities are using something called Green Flag, which is similar to like Blue Flag for Blue Beaches, and it was delivered by Keep Britain Tidy now. And that does have a number of dimensions, so it does look at sort of ecological services as well. We had a system that we developed with the Glasgow Valley Green Network Partnership, and that looked at several dimensions. So it does look at access, safety, welcoming, the biodiversity ecosystem services, and a system where you actually say, what is this place for? Which of these dimensions are most relevant for it? Because otherwise, if you assess across all of these criteria, you just end up with like sludgy grey, because, you know, if you've got a football pitch, it's not going to be particularly biodiverse. Yeah. You might do stuff around the margins, but it's great for football. You could have, you know, an ancient woodland, and it's not going to score high on some of the other elements. So it's about working out what is the right metrics. And that, to be honest, is why there hasn't been a common approach to assessing green space quality, but there's such a focus now on ecosystem services, how we're managing spaces for climate change adaption, that that will be coming through.
I'm interested in the national indicator of accessibility to green spaces that you mentioned. You said that you had like a criteria of 5 minutes of walking distance.
Yeah.
Like, why are you using those 5 minutes and not 10 or maybe 1 minute? Or are you considering some distance or any other impedance attributes? And also, I'm sorry, and are you considering the area of the green spaces to assess the accessibility?
Yeah. Yes. So 5 minutes is based on quite a lot of research around walking distance that people are prepared to go for using it quite frequently. And a lot of that research was done in England, and there's something called the ANCST standard, so Accessible Natural Green Space Standard, that was developed by Natural England. And so there is a research basis for 5 minutes. And it also sets out minimum threshold sizes, and I can't immediately off the top of my head think about that, but I've got 0.2 hectares comes into mind. So it is looking at a reasonable size of space, so it's not just a kind of a tiny pocket park, it's got to be a reasonable amount of space that people could use and do different things in.
So if two different people are accessing two different green spaces, and one green space has a huge amount of area, and the other is very small, the two people have the same accessibility?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Any more?
I kind of overheard you talking about this earlier on, but I didn't hear what was said. But it related to what Bruce was talking about and the use of this as a potential tool in terms of trying to protect green space against encroachment in an urban setting through planning development and all the rest of it. But to use that, and of course if the data's been updated every 6 months, then you've potentially got a very valuable tool. But the issue there is whether you can then access the old data to compare it against the new data. Now, I don't imagine Ordnance Survey archive the data for you. I mean, it's constantly updated. But that means that somebody would be having to archive this stuff. And in the absence of a national archiving strategy for this stuff, presumably that means individual organisations have to do it themselves.
It's something that the project board really was quite concerned about from the outset, and it's something the Scottish Government have taken the lead to say they will investigate a route for archiving it. And I think it's National Registers of Scotland, who was one of the routes that we're investigating at the moment. But I had a conversation with colleagues from Edina today, and I know that they do have quite a good archiving service. So that's again something that we may follow up, because it is absolutely critical that we do, if this is refreshed every 6 months, we should hold copy of that so that we can actually plot trends. Because one of the things that we do find is there is a perception that we are losing green space and that we have a lot less than we used to have. Actually, we probably are not. It's less of an issue in Scotland than, you know, when you're looking at southeast England. There are pockets of area where green space is under pressure, but in some cases, and this is kind of almost blasphemy to say this, we have more green space than anybody could possibly ever need, and it's poor quality. And so there's sometimes some sensible trade-offs to be done. And this also gives you that spatial understanding to know where green space is actually delivering the biggest benefits for people and biodiversity as well.
Is there a danger that the green space map might then serve a negative purpose because it's creating these sacred sites which, without any attention to whether it's actually worth saving?
I mean, that's where the open space audit strategies comes in, about that understanding of what are the important sites, what are the priorities, and green infrastructure, green network plans coming in for that. But you're right, I mean, we did have criticism at one point about where we're creating a developer's charter, and we have had quite a number of land agents and development companies saying, how do we get access to this green space product? You know, because they are looking at, you know, are there sites that could be developed? But, you know, they could find that information in other places as well.
great. I should just say, it's great to see student questions. Don't be afraid to ask. I think we had quite a good exchange. But I think it's maybe time to think about heading
to the bar.
Well, we can retire locally before we normally sort of go for our constitutional green space or not. Trek across the TV library bar for geodrinks and come along to that. Thank you all for coming. And just about the next talk, we may be in the midst of sort of UCU action days, so we may have a shift of date for the following talk. So we're currently scheduled for the 16th again, but it might be the 23rd. So watch out for updates on that. But with the green carpet and green walls, it just remains to say thank you. I was going to throw in a thing about Archer Field, actually, that the best no ball games is if you drive all the way into the rich man's ghetto, the Archer Field estate in East Lothian, and it's there's some posh houses hidden away in a village built in some green space, and you get all the way in, and it's surrounded by a big golf course, and you get in, and you come past the houses, and the little turning loop, and it says, patch of grass about this size, no ball games. In a golf ghetto, wonderful. And on that note, thank you very much indeed to Julie Project for a very interesting talk. Thank you.